Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, Gonchers. I'm Lauren Shippen, a professional writer who once saw Goncharov on the big screen at an LA film festival.
What a privilege.
Yeah.
What a privilege.
Feel really
to
lucky.
See it on the big screen, yeah. Lauren. I'm Cherokee McAnally, head of entertainment at Tumblr, who has watched Goncharov more than 10 times, unfortunately, never on the big screen. Ugh. Adding that to the bucket list.
Absolutely. You got to do it. What you're such a gonch head. And this is Dashboard Diaries, a podcast for you, the folks who are in this internet bunker with us. We talk about what's going on our favorite hell site, get into what we like to call Tumblr, do fandom deep dives, and share the times when we've gone feral over a new ship. And today, we are having a hefty 50th anniversary conversation about Goncharov. That's right. It's been 50 years since Goncharov came out in 1973, which it definitely really did. And we've got some special guests.
Should be a national holiday.
Yeah, it really should be. So we're just going to go dive right into our main topic. So here is that Goncharov celebration. All right, so we have very special guests to talk about Goncharov. With us, we have Perry Carpenter and Mason Amadeus. Perry and Mason run an amazing, amazing podcast called Digital Folklore. Would you guys want to tell us a little bit about what Digital Folklore is?
Yeah, we can give a shot. So Digital Folklore is a show that is all about our online lives and the way that we express ourselves, and we look at things through the lens of academic folklore. So we try to ask very sociological type questions, but at the same time, make it not too heady and too droll. So we've wrapped things in a fictional universe, and there's very weird offbeat stuff that tends to happen. Mason has a raccoon in the show. It's a fun feast.
It's a little bit like if Scooby-Doo had a documentary shoehorn into it. So it's kind of cartoonish, but with real information. So it's kind of a fun little playground to explore that. Mm-hmm. To teach and to learn about like what folklore is, because it's something that is not widely understood, but is crucially important.
Yeah. So to kick us off, we are talking about Goncharov today, which is a movie that does not exist. And so I thought it would be fun to do a little quiz. I'm going to give you four movie titles. One of them is real, and I need you three to pick the real movie.
Oh, gosh.
So the first one's a little bit of a gimme because we're talking about it, right? Goncharov from the 1970s, directed by Martin Scorsese. Shazam from the 90s, starring Sinbad. Kazam from the 90s, starring Shaquille O'Neal. Interview with a Vampire from the 90s, based off the book of the same name. Which of these is a real movie?
I hate to say this, but I think it was Shazam, right? Because there was a whole Mandela effect about Kazam starring Shaquille O'Neal. And that was a whole thing on the internet that I feel like I remember seeing. And I think it was a Sinbad movie, right?
Cherokee, Perry, what do you guys think?
Well, my thought was going to be Kazam. So now I feel like I have been Mandela affected.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, for me, the real one was Shazam, because I think I was old enough to see it when it first came out. But I could be remembering wrong. That's
right,
how Mandela effect works, right?
Yeah. We've got two votes for Shazam and one vote for Kazam. Is that
which
where we're
one? At? Which one had Sinbad?
Shazam had Sinbad.
The one with Sinbad is the real one. The one with Shaq is the fake Mandela effect one, or just the alternate universe one.
So the real movie in this is Kazam, starring Shaquille O'Neal.
No.
Oh no.
No.
Hey,
oh, no.
Look at that.
that?
No.
Sinbad and Shazam is. There is, of course, now a movie called Shazam starring Zachary Levi that's in the DC universe.
Right.
And the interview with a vampire was a little bit of a tricky one because this was a Mandela effect that happened to me earlier this year when I started watching the TV show. I've always remembered it as Interview with a Vampire. It's Interview with the Vampire, which I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But you all seem to understand that was incorrect.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kazam is a real movie. Shazam is not. But a lot of people do remember seeing a movie with Sinbad. But it doesn't exist.
I got double Mandela.
You got double Mandela.
Sorry.
Would you guys want to quickly describe what the Mandela effect is? Because I have to think that's something you encounter all the time in digital folklore.
Go for it, Mason.
That was something that it threw me for a loop when I first heard about it. It was the... oh, gosh. It's called the Mandela effect because a lot of people remember Nelson Mandela dying in prison, mm-hmm. I think, in the 80s. I might have that wrong, but Nelson Mandela did not. So, but a lot of this, it's the communal mass misremembering of things. So, like, the one that I related to the most was the Bernstein Bears, mm-hmm. Is actually mm-hmm. the Berenstain Bears. And then people have been on the hunt for, like, there's a popular picture of an old video cassette of the Berenstain Bears that was spelled that way. And that picture went viral as proof that we have shifted to an alternate universe,
right.
In which this is now true.
Yes, yeah. The Berenstain thing really got me too. That threw me for a loop. I still don't really believe it.
Well, I still don't know which is which. It can every time I forget, I'm in too deep.
We are all occupying slightly different universes.
Yeah,
I mean, you do get into a lot of the internet culture stuff, and what one of the prevailing theories is for a lot of Mandela effects is that. With the Large Hadron Super Collider from, which one is that?
CERN.
It's the one in Sweden. Yeah, CERN. The last time they did that, they actually inflicted a multiverse on everybody.
You know what? I believe it. And I like to think that there's a multiverse somewhere where I can actually watch Goncharov. It's a real movie that exists.
Right.
Oh, there are multiple multiverses, I think, with Goncharov. There's the Goncharov. Like cartoon in one, musical in another, you know, TV show in the next.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Right. But then what movie from our universe would they have made up in the Goncharov universe? Would like...
Titanic.
Oh, it'd have to be Titanic. I was going to say The Matrix because it would just be ironic.
That'd be very trippy. We should probably talk about what Goncharov is and how exactly it began. So yes. Goncharov is a movie by Martin Scorsese from the 1970s about the mob. It's the greatest mob movie ever made, and it doesn't exist. It is a essentially mass hallucination, but like a participatory hallucination that Tumblr had last fall that grew out of a post from... a few years prior.
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah, of these boots that are knockoff boots that have a fake sort of movie poster on the tongue of the boot, and it says Martin Scorsese presents Goncharov, and then a bunch of other information. And this post floated around the internet for a couple of years. There's actually a Reddit post about it as well, and everybody's sort of speculating on like what it was, you know, trying to say, what it was actually trying to be. Most people agree that it was that the real film I was trying to reference was Gomorrah from 2008. But then for some reason, last fall, Tumblr decided to pretend that this was a real movie and make it so. Perry Mason, what was like the first thing that you saw about Goncharov? Were you aware of this before we started to talk about it?
I was not. You were the first person I heard about it from. And I have no idea how I missed it because I love this so much.
Yeah. Well, I think, so we had missed it, but... In fairness, it's really only been around a short amount of time. So the first real inflection point was in November of 2022. And as we sit here recording this in early April, this thing blew up like crazy within weeks. And there were several other things competing for people's attention at the time. Of course, holiday season, but then also a lot of noise over on Twitter because of somebody taking that over and kind of forcing it downhill a lot, which I also think contributed to some of the stuff that was going on Tumblr, because you had this, you know, massive influx of new users trying to abandon ship from Twitter as well.
Yeah.
And looking for something to have fun with.
I have a timeline question. Mm-hmm. You said the first appearance, was it just the picture of the boots in 2020 and the actual, mm-hmm.
yeah.
the lore did not form until 2022?
Correct.
Okay.
The original poster actually no longer exists, or the original post doesn't, but it was from a Tumblr user called Zooty Coon. And then it got, yeah, it got tossed around Tumblr a little bit. Like, I remember seeing it actually like 18 months ago on my own Tumblr dash. And because really? Somebody commented, like, this loser hasn't even seen Goncharov. And it was just like, a, you know, a joke. And then for whatever reason, in, November of 2022, I think the first post that really blew up was a movie poster that somebody made of a Goncharov movie poster. And then, Cherokee, I mean, you got to see behind the scenes this thing take flight. What happened?
So that movie poster, which, you know, cast the film and everything, essentially created the, you know, framework in which everyone could kind of play with Goncharov, right? So I think that was really the catalyst. And I'm looking right now at our last 6 months metrics, and the metrics for Goncharov, it is a like line straight up in the air on the line graph. Overnight, genuinely overnight, on the 21st of November, there it went from, you know, barely just a few searches for Goncharov, like there were like a few thousand starting on the 20th, and on the 21st, there were over 133,000 searches alone, 12,000 posts made, 212,000 reblogs. And this Jeez. Is just on that one day. So it really was just like a powder keg. Just, it was just like from zero to 100, zero to a million, genuinely overnight. And that engagement kind of continued for about a week on like a high level. And then it kind of slowed down around like mid to late December. But it was just such a huge, like, moment that it happened.
Yeah.
And I don't even, I feel like I logged on one morning and was like, what?
Sorry, I've got a question on some of the stats. When you're doing those analytics, do you have the ability to understand, like, what population that's coming from to see if there's some kind of effect due to age group or region or anything else, you know, personal interest? That'd be really interesting to drill down into.
Oh, it's not, unfortunately, something that at least I, with my very basic statistics knowledge, know how to access.
What would you say, Cherokee, is likely the Tumblr user-based demographics? Like, is that something that...
Yes, I can share that with you. Tumblr is 42% Gen Z, 38% Millennial, and 20% Gen X and Boomer. We are, like, gender split is 56% female, 44% male, or identifying as. And our biggest user base is definitely in the U.S. And one kind of interesting thing that we do track is duplication across platforms. So, for example, 74% of people who are on Tumblr are not on Snapchat. 51% for TikTok, 48% for Twitter. So Tumblr really is people's, for those who are really active on Tumblr, it's their primary social platform.
Half of Tumblr users do not use TikTok?
Correct.
That's buck wild to me, especially given the breakdown.
Wild.
Almost half being Gen Z.
Mm-hmm. I do think there was a big exodus from other social platforms to Tumblr. I feel like this is not a correct characterization, but I always call Tumblr the antisocial social platform because you're so much like you're engaging about your passions with people you may not know. It's kind of where you can kind of go to dive in and geek out and, you know, just really like be unapologetically yourself. Often people are anonymous on there. And I do think that kind of drove a lot, just like we see a lot of Gen Z, you know, just like there's a movement for flip phones because people were saying, you know, like I just use, people are starting to use their socials and other things just on their computers and keeping their phones to like reduce their screen time. And so I do think it was very much like a rejection of like the social aspect of social media, even though Tumblr obviously is a very social platform, but in a completely different way, I feel, than others. I never see it as a competitor of other platforms because I think it's so different and like unique. It's just a completely different beast.
Very artist friendly.
Yeah.
This is a bit of a divergence, but I'm super curious because I did not know that there was any sort of a push of people moving away from smartphones as their primary way of interacting with social media and back to computers.
Yeah.
That breaks my brain a little bit because I use my computer primarily for them. But I feel old for doing that. So you're telling me the kids are doing that now and it's cool again.
The,
It's cool to have a flip phone.
Yeah. Yes. And I will say I have seen more and more flip phones when I'm just out and about kind of in the world.
Wild.
You know, with like the younger age groups. Yeah. I feel like I sound very hello fellow kids right now saying this. But it's true. Like I do. Yeah. I have like there has been a distinct kind of shift away from smartphones. And honestly, I saw that and I was like, that sounds great. I would love to not be glued to my phone all the time. Yeah.
I mean, Tumblr too, the majority of users are desktop users, right? I mean, I know it's like split kind of 50-50, but I use Tumblr primarily on the desktop.
It's actually about 80% in the app.
Oh, it is? Mm. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I'm really, really wrong.
Yeah. But which is interesting, Lauren, because interesting. I do feel like a lot of super users who are reblogging, you know, dozens of things or hundreds of things do prefer the desktop experience. I definitely prefer using it on desktop just because like bigger screen, I can look at like if I want to search a tag, I see a grid of the tags versus just one at a time. So it's just, you know, you can see more content at once, I prefer the desktop experience also to see the themes that people pick out and have fun with. I just love that side.
You should.
Tumblr.
You should absolutely create a flip phone app, though. Just to see what consumption is like.
Yeah.
On that form factor.
We used to have text to post. You could text a number what you wanted your post to say, and it would post on your Tumblr. I think we sunsetted that a few years ago. Yeah.
There's no take backs. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
So I'll tell you a quick story because I'm, you know, in an upper demographic. I just turned 50 last year. Probably about the time Goncharov was going hot on Tumblr. And so I had used Tumblr a few years ago and it didn't click with me at the time, but my kids are huge Tumblr users. And I was like, okay, you know, what's going on with Tumblr? Mm-hmm. And my son said, you know, this is where all these, you know, very niche groups of people hang out. You know, he's both him and I are on the autism spectrum. So he said, there's a whole bunch of neurodivergence there. They have a whole bunch of friends that are, you know, spread across several different communities, and those communities are represented there as well. And then he said, let me send you some of the best posts that I've seen. And he sent this post about somebody that had a dream that they were working at a delicatessen selling clown meat. And, you know, just all the interaction about...
I think I've seen that post.
What is clown meat? Is it human? Is it not human? And what are the laws and the ethics surrounding this? And just the way everybody was piling onto this, you know, creating this really interesting, rich discussion about clown meat. And I thought that was fantastic.
Look, only on Tumblr.
I really do think that and just like Goncharov in general is a thing that could only happen on Tumblr because of who the user base is and what they like to do and the way that they behave. And I think one of the things I really loved about Goncharov is it leaned into one of my favorite things about Tumblr, which actually we talked about on our last episode, which is that Tumblr users will make fan art for literally anything. Like there will be just a nonsense text post and then there will be fan art for it all of a sudden. And so obviously like Goncharov was a huge wealth of just absolutely stunning fan art. But what was amazing, and here I will drop this this document in the chat here, is that somebody compiled a document of all of the Goncharov lore, the script excerpts, the scoring that people made, the casting.
I pulled
the
same document. It's that master doc is amazing.
It's incredible.
The level of detail that's in that is crazy.
Can I just bring something up? That's the first thing I saw. Is the act of adding lore to the Goncharov story referred to as gaunching?
Is it referred to as gaunching?
Well, the very first line says there's a Discord server now for gaunching.
I think gaunching, I've seen gaunching used more generally to just mean like participating in the Goncharov fandom, right? So like, I think that, you know, if you are just like playing along with the joke, I think you are gaunching rather, you don't necessarily have to be adding to the lore. And I also don't know, you know, I think that there's so much out there on Tumblr that's not in this document, that's probably not in the Discord, but that is on Tumblr, people adding to the lore, people, you know, putting their headcanons forward, which in this case, a headcanon could easily become canon because there is no real canon. And so it does become this like, sort of democratic system of like, okay, well, what posts are getting big enough that the people who are making these documents are hanging out and in these Discords are sort of making them official Goncharov lore?
Well, I mean, the cool thing about, you know, a master doc like that and some of the other posts that are that have been out there, so the, some of the other archival ways of managing this, is that they are literally managing the canon in a lot of ways of saying, no, you can't, or at least you shouldn't try to create something that is directly competing with or conflicting with this other set of, you know, quote unquote, facts that we've established or scene structures that we've established or casting or catchphrases or anything else. I think that that's, it's fascinating to see the group agreement with that as well.
Yeah. Bill, it's really interesting just given the fan casting power of Tumblr as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always think about how many movies and shows have been fan cast on Tumblr before they were cast elsewhere and they were completely accurate. Most recently, Ben Barnes from Shadow and Bone as the Darkling. That was a Tumblr fan cast that, you know, became reality. And so I do think Tumblr somehow has this kind of hive mind where everyone just like agrees on the vibe or something, because it really did feel like, yeah, this is the cast and this is the plot. And obviously there's a big deal with clocks like throughout as symbolism, like duh.
Tumblr is yes and personified, right?
And yes, I think that's it.
One of the things that I've loved too is I've seen some, I'll have to make sure to reblog this next time I see one of these posts, but I've seen posts, and certainly back in November when there was lots of gonching going on, that are like, you know, modern AU of Goncharov, and it's people like doing like posts about a fan AU of canon that fans made. Like, it's just, there's like over 500 fics in the Goncharov tag on AO3, the largest fan fiction website. So it's like, yes anding just all the way down.
Well, and I think you hit on something there, though, when you talk about AO3, is that the reason that something like this can take off so well on Tumblr is you do have a fantastic collection of creative people, creative writers, artists, people who can put these things together. And it's an outlet for them. So it's not just trying to do something for the sake of doing it, something for the creative process and the community that they're wanting to get involved in. And it would come out some other way if it didn't go into Goncharov.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's built with collaboration in mind. You know, it's so easy for people to kind of pile on a post.
And we could talk about that in a second too, because that fits into what makes something viral is that participation piece. And there's been a lot of studies on that.
Well, I was going to ask, in terms of things like Goncharov, it's like a fake Mandela effect, right? Because everybody sort of knows that it's fake, and it's this viral meme, but it's more than a meme. Are there, in your digital folklore studies, are there things like this that you have come across before? And if there are there sort of any similarities across these different memes or viral things that sort of tell us about why people do stuff like this and how it happens?
Yeah, I think so. I'll let Mason chime in on this, because I know that he probably has some thoughts. But, you know, one of the really interesting things about studying folklore has been the way that we see things used and misused. And so one of the things, and as I was looking through a lot of the Tumblr comments on Goncharov, is that there was kind of an understanding that this is also an experiment in disinformation. To kind of see what can be created and what some people might believe is real. And so as they, you did have groups of people that were trying to make official Wikipedia entries or edit Martin Scorsese's page to include it. And it was like 7 or 8 times. And Wikipedia was like, please keep the purity of, you know, what is fact and what is not. And so you had people within the Tumblr community saying, we want to play by the rules. We're trying to show what disinformation can look like, but we don't want to pollute legitimate sites, because we do want there to be objective truth out in the world. And I think that, you know, when you look at 2015, 2016 on, we've seen the devastating effect that real disinformation can bring. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at the population of Tumblr, you're seeing people who have really been grappling with that for a good chunk of their lives. It's not just the past few years for them. It is a big percentage of the life that they've lived. And they're seeing that and they're saying, how do we grapple with that? And something like Goncharov is one interesting expression of it. And as I was looking through it, seeing kind of, you know, the way that people were trying to police that and say, you know, please stop editing real Wikipedia. Please stop trying to edit IMDb and so on. But then they did get some, you know, some head nods. There's a TV Tropes page for it. There's, you know, several other expressions. There's, you know, quote unquote, official soundtracks and sheet music and all of these other fun expressions that if somebody is not of the mind of, you know, if somebody doesn't dig a little bit deeper, they may actually think that this is a real movie. Like one of the things that we studied, which was Slender Man.
Yeah. That is an interesting kind of alignment.
And Slender Man led, you know, to real life harm, which is, you know, happens a lot with disinformation, as you alluded to.
Yeah. I mean, Mason, what were some of the artifacts that were out there for Slender Man?
Yeah. My first thought was that there are definitely parallels to Slender Man, because that was also, you know, a lighthearted thing at the start, horror themed, but it was just everyone contributing little bits.
Started in a comedy form.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And with Slender Man, there was like the German woodcuts, the faked German woodcuts, and like old paintings and tapestries and people making that sort of evidence. But it was, all of the examples I'm thinking of are more decentralized in a way, whereas like most of this happened on Tumblr. There was a central platform where everyone was working on this, whereas Slender Man started on a comedy forum, kind of gained popularity there, and then spread to other places of the internet that then added more to it. Like the YouTube series Marble Hornets did a significant amount of lore and world building, which influenced other people creating in the space. And so it spread really far off the initial platform really quickly. And in a way, memes are also like an example of this in the sense of they gain so much social metadata as they're passed around and new layers of meaning are added to them. But that again is so decentralized. I think I don't know what it is about Tumblr specifically that makes it such a magical little ground for growing this kind of thing. But because it all happened there and is able to have like someone posts like, I'm making a Google Doc and we're going to add things to it. And it's everything being available in the same space and worked on by this community. And it seems largely like it's stayed there. I don't know for sure, but it's not like people on Twitter are now
spilled over into
it.
Twitter a little bit, and people on Twitter didn't know what to do with it. So some people thought it was some people thought it was fun, and other people were like, "What the heck, dude? This is kind of lame. I don't know what's going on here." But you know, one of the interesting things, kind of, you know, thinking about this, kind of grappling with what truth is and thinking about disinformation, is in folklore there is the concept of fake lore, which is where people will create, you know, non-genuine folklore, which is, you know, exactly what fake lore sounds like. But it's usually there's a purpose behind that. That purpose is usually either creative, you know, for the sake of writing a book and I'm going to, you know, create an alternative version of Little Red Riding Hood, or, you know, my own version of anything out there, or even something whole cloth, but then say this originated from some kind of German mythology when it never did. But then the darker way of doing that is to kind of other people and to say that, you know, that is, they're trying to reflect some kind of dark prejudice or something like that in whatever lore they create. And folklorists and anthropologists really are struggling with that, I think, in the age that we're in right now, because as we saw with Goncharov and we saw with Slender Man and so on, it's so easy now to pollute the real record of things.
Yeah.
I mean, and so you can potentially go in something that's not policed well, you could potentially go in and edit a real Wikipedia page or something else in, you know, in an older post and make it look like this thing exists, or that there's evidence of something that reflects a much darker purpose than the fun-loving, you know, stuff that we see with Goncharov.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Well, first off, they have now locked Scorsese's Wikipedia page.
Fair.
Jeez.
But it also makes me think of when you're talking about going in and kind of replacing something and making it something new, it makes me think of back in the early Tumblr days when you could edit someone else's post if you reblocked it and switch out the image.
Yes.
And so there were a bunch of kind of Tumblr heritage posts that were getting cycled around. I think one was like Jensen Ackles like in like a gym uniform or something, and people kept like switching out the photo but change it, and so people had no idea where this post started, which was the original. And there were just dozens of iterations, if not like thousands, just across Tumblr.
That's something that really can only exist on Tumblr, right? Because I think that Tumblr used to have this incredibly unique quality in which you could edit somebody's original post in the reblog, which is wild. And that's not a thing anymore. But what is a thing still is that if I make a post and it gets reblogged a bunch and then I edit the original post, that those edits don't show up in the reblog, right? And that's a thing too, where people, you know, will make jokes with, you know, posting a particular text or a particular image. They'll let it get reblogged a bunch, and then they will change the original post, and eventually someone will say, like, click through to the original, and there will be like a fun little like Rickroll or surprise or punchline. And that's not something that any other platform has, because I mean most platforms, you know, like Twitter, I know, has introduced an edit button for some people, but I think that then if the retweets, I mean, who knows what's going on Twitter? I'm not going to pretend to understand how the infrastructure of that place works anymore, but it is a unique facet of Tumblr for sure.
Well, Twitter's been dealing with tons of iterations of, like, you know, how do we deal with the fact that people do play with truth on a massive scale for you know, for much darker purposes, I think, on a platform like Twitter or Facebook than on Tumblr. Because Twitter or Facebook, it's not really about creativity. It's about making a point or trying to deceive somebody for a very dark purpose. I remember when Musk said, hey, everybody can be Twitter blue now if you just, you know, pay $8 or whatever, not really believing that people would do bad things with that. And then, of course, right when he made that a thing, everybody started, you know, creating these fake accounts that looked like verified accounts and, you know, causing stocks to tumble, you know, people's reputations to be damaged and so on. It's like, oh, okay, I guess that may be a bad idea. People aren't just fun-loving on the internet.
Yeah. And I think the disinformation aspect, I hadn't really thought about that in relation to Goncharov, because I think in my mind, like, Goncharov is such, like, it's such a meme, it's a mass joke, but you're right in that it sort of fits into the same modes as a lot of disinformation. And this is a little bit of a tangent, I won't linger in it for too long, because it's, you know, disinformation gets depressing very quickly. But I subscribe to a lot of newsletters and follow a lot of journalists who have been working in dis and misinformation for the last couple of years. It's sort of like a special interest of mine. And it's been really interesting to see over the last, I would say, 6 to 9 months, a lot of those journalists who have been absolutely mired in this particular topic for years and years and years are not using the terms disinformation and misinformation anymore. Because some of them have kind of come to the conclusion of, like, there's one newsletter that I read called Control Alt Right Delete, which I think is a great newsletter title.
That's a phenomenal title. And,
Yeah.
And that writer talked about this back in, I think, December, about how when we're dealing with these darker aspects of disinformation, especially as it pertains to, you know, extremists in this country, it's not about misinformation or what's true anymore. It's about a completely separate constructed reality that people have chosen to live in. And that's where disinformation as a term kind of meets its limit, because it doesn't matter to them that it's not true, because it fits into their constructed reality. And I think that Goncharov is sort of like a very lighthearted version of that, right? Like, it's just a version of reality that we are collectively creating, in which this movie exists. And, you know, it doesn't matter what's true about it, because the purpose of the meme is that it's an alternate version of reality.
What I think is so fascinating about that particularly, though, is that nobody who's engaging in this is thinking of it like that, you know? No one in there is thinking yes, I am creating an alternate version of reality engaging in these folkloric practices. It's just like, oh, this is fun and creative. And, like, how naturally we do that as humans, of just like, oh, this is fun, let me just pile in and join in. It's super cool to me. And I'm really curious about what it is about Tumblr, because it's like you were talking about with the fan casting and everything else. It really is a very particular ground for this kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think a big aspect of it is that Tumblr is not the home to, but a home of fanfic, fan art, headcanons, creating, you know, your own world within the parameters of the media that you consume and that you love. So Goncharov was just a new exciting challenge or journey or like opportunity here, because fanfic could become fan fact in the context of Goncharov, which I think was very exciting for our user base, who, you know, this was kind of prime for them to dig their teeth into, or to dig their claws into, whatever the term is that I'm looking for, mandala effect. Let's call it that.
Well, and I think that I do think that there is something unique about Tumblr's infrastructure and like the way that actually Tumblr functions practically as a platform. And Mason, earlier when you were talking about sort of the decentralized memes, I'm really curious to hear what you think about how the actual like user interface of a platform can affect something and keep it there or, you know, take it elsewhere. Because I think another thing with Tumblr, and I think Tumblr now is very much, yes, the home of fandom on the internet. Like, sure, there's fandom on TikTok and on Twitter, but like Tumblr has just sort of always been that. But I think it became that because of the way in which reblogs work, the way that the dashboard works, the way that you can have a Tumblr account and have a bunch of sub-blogs that you can post to. Mm-hmm. So you can have your Marvel sub-blog, you can have your DC Comics, so that they don't overlap, because some people really like to keep their fandom blogs very specific. Whereas if you want to do that on Twitter, you would have to create separate accounts for each new Twitter profile. And when it comes to something like Slender Man, like, why does that thrive outside of a particular platform?
That's a good question. And it brushes up against something that I was thinking. Like, Tumblr supports very well natively all sorts of media that you can include in a post. Like, even audio posts, which is not something you really see anywhere else. But you know, that's, you can do photos and videos and quotes and reblogs and things like that, all in ways that are presented very well. Whereas like video on Twitter is like a compromise from a user element standpoint, because it was added in later and it doesn't super fit with the design. You know, and a lot of platforms are,
or text on Instagram or text on TikTok, you know, there's no good mixed mode experience in a lot of these things. I mean, Facebook is pretty close, but Facebook has its own demographic issues, and legacy baggage.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think when you look at platforms, you do have to think about, how do I want to interact on platform X? And it has to be tailored to that. I think Tumblr is very much, it caters towards somebody that needs to express themselves, period.
Yeah.
And it's going to let them do that. Versus like TikTok, where you do have to be fairly comfortable with doing something on video. But TikTok itself is also, it is a folklore factory in a lot of ways, because it allows you to create something and then it can let somebody else become part of the conversation by stitching or duoing or something like that. So you can get this, you know, cat making a weird noise, and then somebody else can go in and put guitar behind that. And then somebody else can go, oh, I hear a drum part in my head, let me put that. And then before you know it, you have this, you know, nice, really rocking symphony of a cat doing its thing. And it's just gone around. It's gone through several different iterations. And I think Tumblr does that, but in a much more multi-mode type of way. So you can get all these different creative vibes. You know, somebody else, you know, somebody's a great writer, somebody's a great manipulator of imagery, somebody else is, you know, going to create music and so on. And it just comes together in a very full way.
Yeah. And I like how on Tumblr, like, as you said, like, you can kind of build posts exactly how you want to see them. And then you can also add on to people's posts in kind of whatever media you want as well. You can reblog and add a poll or a photo or a GIF or whatever it is. And so I think you kind of see like the rings of a tree, you know, like when you look at a post, you kind of see like the journey that it's taken across all these people's blogs, especially when it's one of those posts that becomes, you know, like a reblog tree where people are just adding, or a reblog chain where people are just adding on their own kind of take. I think it was it the Mr. Sandman, Man Me a Sand, like that collaborative kind of.
Yeah.
Make so, like, so
they made up an entire song. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Nice.
Thank you for re-unlocking that in my brain. We interviewed Dr. Vivian Acemos for our episode on Slender Man. And one of the things we talked to her about was how the internet has changed folklore. And one of the things she mentioned that stuck with me is how basically the platforms it's created on end up shaping it and seeing how it takes form.
Yeah.
And so it kind of makes sense to think of this one. This is largely text, and it comes from Tumblr, which home of text posts and fanfics, but also has the graphic design element and things like that. But
I think, well, I think you mentioned fan fiction. I think that is the heart of this, is you have a lot of people that are, you know, their heart is in story and their heart is in creating, you know, big things. And they had this, you know, chance to come together collectively and do that. The other thing, going back to folks that we interviewed on the Slenderman side, we had that introduction of, you know, the concept of the Woozle effect. Which is, it comes from a Winnie the Pooh story where, you know, Pooh and Piglet were following their own footsteps in circles, thinking that that would lead them out of the woods. And it's become this term that's been used to describe where somebody's evidence of a thing is actually the fact that they did the thing. Somebody else did the same thing. And so you end up with, circular footnotes and things or references that the reason that this thing is true is because there's this other thing is true that actually points back to the first thing. And so it becomes really hard to deconstruct. And I think there are elements of that in Goncharov as well. There's been so much ancillary creation around that, that somebody could point to the reality of it by finding one of these, you know, third, fourth, fifth generation pieces of content that somebody created. You know, the fact that there's a musical score for it.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting piece of evidence for a thing.
Yeah, the only thing about this film that doesn't exist is the film itself. Every other aspect of it has been completely fleshed out.
Well, and you even have Martin Scorsese in a text chain saying, "Yeah, I did that movie several years ago."
Yeah,
which is incredible. And I've seen some people on Tumblr sort of joking about like, what would happen if somebody ever, you know, actually made Goncharov? Like, would that ruin the joke?
They would get skewered.
Or would it be the ultimate culmination? Yeah. And I think the Woozle effect is something that I was thinking about just in terms of how hard it can be to, find the starting point of all of these things, but also to know where to start when looking into these things. And I think Tumblr especially can be, intimidating to people sometimes in terms of jumping into it as a platform. I'm really curious for you too, when you are picking a topic, whether it's Slenderman or you want to learn about Goncharov, where do you start? Like, what's the first thing that you do? What are the places you go to, the modes you take to try and untangle this web?
We, at the moment, at least for season one, have kind of gone with broader themes to explore. Like the Slenderman one was exploring a folkloric concept of ostension, which is when someone in real life acts out parts of a story or parts of a story come to fruition. And Slenderman was a good example, and so was the Momo phenomenon. And so then in the other one, we're exploring alternate reality games and like folk groups. So it's kind of, as to where that started, I think it just sort of comes from aggregating a couple of different like neat things we've heard about, and then following that trail a little bit deeper and seeing what that intersects with and trying to find a point in between to take things on. I feel like that's true because if I have to give like the perfect, complete, honest answer, I have like no idea. You know how whenever you set to start something, you have this idea and then no matter what, the act of doing it makes it something totally different. That definitely happens a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we do. We start with these broad ideas of something like, the mimetic nature of something might be a theme. And then we want to find five examples of that. And so Goncharov could be, mimetic in some ways. It's more than just a meme, but it is very mimetic in the way that it spread. Then we would get into topics like virility. And you might look at Goncharov versus like Bernie Sanders and mittens. What was the reason that potentially that one of these actually both of those exploded? What were the factors involved in that? Well, after with Goncharov, you've got kind of the implosion of Twitter. You've got just the natural group of people that like to hang out on Tumblr. There's probably three or four other factors that we could find that may have contributed to that. With Bernie Sanders, you have, as you look at several aspects of virility, you have, you know, ordinary people. You have heightened emotion. You have something, you know, people that are just looking for fun. You also have at the end of a very, very rough political season and everybody needing to collectively exhale and laugh a little bit. And so you saw people, regardless of where they were on the political spectrum, agreeing, this is a great image, and sharing that in so many different ways. And there's probably two reasons for this. One is because I found it in a book called Memes in Digital Culture, and it is from the Mandela effect of the Mandela version of Lauren. This is from somebody named Lamore Schifrin. And the name sounds so weird. Close to yours, yeah, but in a weird alternate universe type of way.
Oh my god! From the multiverse where Goncharov exists.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And in her book on memes, and this is a little bit, it's like 10 years old at this point that this book came out, but she wrote about a study from Jonah Berger and Katie Milkman, and they talked about the 5 P's of what makes something go viral. And so, or actually the 6 P's. And so one is positivity. So it's something that people can enjoy, can have fun in, they can celebrate. Another one is provoking high arousal emotions. And that's usually things like anger or joy, celebration. Another one is packaging, just the way that it looks, the way that it feels. Prestige of, you know, maybe being associated with somebody great like Martin Scorsese or, you know, if we're to do it, you know, something this year with The Matrix, or not The Matrix, with John Wick 4 coming out, you might do something with Keanu Reeves. Positioning, you know, and then the last one is participation. Can everybody pile on to this thing? And I think when you look at, you know, something like Goncharov or Bernie's Mittens or a lot of these other things that have just gone crazy, it is because you see several of these things lining up in just the perfect way. And it was fun to kind of look through that lids of the way that certain academics have tried to measure the mimetic nature of something or the viral nature of something and try to look at that and see whether these things match up or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting because it sort of relates to a book that I'm reading right now called Because Internet, which is about the history of sort of internet language. And one of the things that she talks about in it in the chapter that I just read was specifically around early memes, as we think of memes, right? So like lolcats and Doge and these various things and sort of the impact font memes, and how in the beginning they were existing in a very specific community because of the amount of effort that it took to make them. And then when sort of meme maker websites came to fruition, all of a sudden they exploded. And I think that the ability to participate and the ease of participation is so important and something that definitely lends itself to the Goncharov phenomenon, because yes, you can be a beautiful visual artist or an incredible writer and write script, you know, pieces or write music or whatever it is. But you can also just be a person with a Tumblr account who like makes a post about a moment in Goncharov like you would talk about a moment in a movie. And because there's no sort of one true source, everybody's participation is equal. And I think that's really unique.
Yeah.
I love the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Much.
And it would not be Dashboard Diaries if we didn't end the show with our feels corner. Cherokee, what is giving you feels this week?
The feels I'm getting this week are terrified, but it's still an emotion. It's still a feeling. I am watching Yellowjackets season 2. I don't know if you watch this show, Lauren.
I do.
But oh my. Did you see the newest episode?
I haven't seen the newest one yet. I've only seen the first one of the season.
Oh my, Lauren. Oh my. So yeah, I love Yellowjackets. I have watched the first season 2 or 3 times, I think. And I just love the mystery of it. It's so much fun. So yeah, really stoked about this season of Yellowjackets and Succession.
Of course.
Succession, not Secession. Succession just came back. And you know, as a Tom Gregg truther, I'm very excited.
Oh, the disgusting brothers.
My favorite duo back. What about you, Lauren? What has you in your feels?
You know, it's going to be Star Trek Next Gen again. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but my partner and I have been watching through the whole series. We're in season 5 now, and we just watched an episode last night called The Outcast that was made in 1992, and it's this like beautiful trans allegory about like the strictures of gender being a prison and people, you know, being able to choose how they want to express their gender. It was made in 1992 and it's mm-hmm. amazing. And so I really love seeing stuff from 30 years ago that is, you know, so heartfelt and so progressive. It just makes me mm-hmm. very, very hopeful. So that's been a highlight. And then earlier yeah. this same season was the very famous episode Darmok, which made me cry. So get emotional over old TV shows. That's my recommendation for this week.
Love to get emotional over old TV shows. So go back and watch Goncharov, old film,
exactly.
not TV show, but still, it absolutely will put you in your feels.
It really will. And with that, I'm Lauren Shippen, and you can find me at thelaurenshippen.tumblr.com.
I am Cherokee McAnally, and you can find me at Overshares, Overchers, pun very much intended, .tumblr.com. The pun very much intended is not a part of the URL, just flagging. This has been Dashboard Diaries, and
may your anons always be loving,
your dash always refresh,
your gifts always be loading,
and your ships always canon.
May the fix you're reading always be finished,
and the answers you seek always in the reblogs.
Thanks for scrolling with us.